You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
Fresh from America's Dairyland,
ladies and gentlemen.
From the Benches Podcast.
Touchdown, Packers!
Packers Talk Radio Network.
You're listening to From the Benches with Ross Uglum and Ryan Hilsland.
Hello and welcome back to another midweek edition of From the Benches. We've been thrown off a little bit on our schedule, but with finally another Sunday game, we should be able to get back into the swing of things. My name is Ross Uglum. I'm a writer at PackersTalk.com, and with me, as always, is Ryan Hills. And Ryan, how are you?
Doing just fine. Obviously an exciting game to talk about, but plenty to break down, plenty to go over besides just the miracle ending, obviously. So let's dive into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, the news of the day, it's getting on to be a little bit past when that game happened, but the Packers beat the Lions 27-23. It was obviously an exciting ending. Aaron Rodgers hitting Richard Rodgers on a Hail Mary play. As far as the news end of it, I guess the offensive line is about as beat up as they could be. They were down at one point to no healthy linemen. Josh Walker was in at left tackle, and they're had anybody else gone down, that was it. Like, they were going to have to play Richard Rodgers at tackle or something like that. But the prognosis is okay. Seems like the only guy not participating in practice right now and probably not expected to play against Dallas, or at least in question of playing against Dallas, would be Lindsley. And the other story, big story of the week, were Alonzo Harrison, Eddie Lacy, missing curfew, and then Lacy being basically benched for the Detroit game, and Alonzo Harris being given his outright release. That, of course, led to John Crockett being elevated to the active roster, and he would go on to play. Ryan, what was your reaction to the game winner? Where were you? How did it go down?
Well, I was working. Thursdays, I work second shift Monday through Thursday. Generally on Thursdays, we're done early enough that I'm able to watch the Thursday night game, but had a few things go wrong. So I was stuck at work for most of the game. So I'm following along on Twitter when I can and watching the game cast on ESPN's app. And it got to the point where I saw Rodgers' touchdown run come across the game cast, and I decided that it was time to find some audio. So threw on the NFL mobile app on my phone, realized I could get video. So we hooked up my phone to the audio system we've got at work, had it over the loudspeaker, and me, my boss, and one other guy were huddled around my phone at a desk watching the last three or so minutes of the game. So we're all right there, and you know, a couple different times look pretty dire, and then obviously when Rodgers pulls in the Hail Mary, there was a little bit of freaking out between the three of us that were huddled around my phone watching the end of it. It was fun.
Yeah, I was alone in my house with the dog, so I like to just kind of watching the game and felt pretty when Stafford hit that no name receiver up the middle to clinch the to clinch that third down conversion and be able to obviously run the clock down to down to whatever 23 seconds or however long Green Bay had when they cut the ball. I was pretty pessimistic about their chances. My optimism grew quite a bit when I actually thought that they were going to throw the pass interference flag on Jared Aberderis and that Mason Crosby was going to get a chance for redemption there. That didn't happen. Obviously, the game does turn on a penalty, and we'll discuss that briefly. But just when the ball was caught, I took the 2 seconds to just kind of look around and make sure that there were no penalties. But after that, I went absolutely bananas. It was the exact same reaction that I had to, and I told someone this. I think I may have even told you this. It was the exact same reaction that I had to Derek Rose's bank in buzzer beater against the Cavs in the playoffs, where I just ran around my house doing the Joker cackle from The Dark Knight, kind of involuntarily. That was my level of excitement. So once you go Joker cackle, it's pretty serious stuff. Ryan, I got to ask you about that, and obviously be as unbiased as you can. Was that a face mask, or was it just a situation where they're always going to call that?
Well, I think they are always going to call that. His hand goes across his face, Rodgers' head turns, and the ref is behind him without a really clear view of, on replays and in zoomed in pictures, high def pictures, you see that, it was just his finger inside the face mask. Well, from the ref's perspective behind the play, he can't tell if it's just a finger through the face mask, or if it's his whole hand. All he sees is Rodgers go down, his head turn a little bit, and you have to call that from his perspective. It's not really all that debatable. Once you get a high def look at it, a slow mo replay, then you can maybe debate whether it should have been a face mask call by the exact letter of the law. There were some Vikings fans pulling out the rule book and highlighting things. Vikings fans matter than Lions fans about that call, I think. But the reality is, in full speed, in real time, the ref's going to make that call every time because he does not have a perfect vantage point at it. And from what he saw, the ref had to make that call. And you slow it down, and maybe it's not exactly what the face mask rule is, but he did get his finger in the face mask, and it looks like Rodgers' head turns a little bit, so I think it probably was a face mask, and I think the ref has to make that call at that point. What did you think?
Well, I didn't know that you were unaware that the National Football League just exists as a conspiracy against the Minnesota Vikings and their fans.
I had heard, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my thoughts on the whole thing. Obviously, his thumb did get inside the face mask and caused Rodgers' head to go right. That stuff that you're talking about as far as, those highlighted sections in the rule book, yeah, I mean, maybe by the letter of the law, it wasn't technically a face mask, but the impact of the face mask caused his head to go right, and the ref making the call is seeing a hand up around the head make the head turn, and he, 100 times out of 100, they're going to make that call. And obviously, this being the high-definition era, every penalty is scrutinized on a level that, refs 20 years ago didn't have to deal with. And not saying that officiating's gotten any better or worse over the last 20 years, but it's a hard job. These are extremely elite athletes. Things are happening way faster than, we can even comprehend. And to say that that was, some horrendous call is just a joke. I mean, where the referee was in that position on a completely broken Cal Stanford band play type of play, that's the call that's going to be made 100 out of 100 times, right or wrong. So, Ryan, what I want to do now is dive behind the benches and talk a little X's and O's here, and I just want to ask you what you think the differences are between what we're doing in the first three quarters and what we're doing in the fourth quarter, because in all these games, it seems like, or at least after the bye, Green Bay has a, with the exception of just blasting away at the Vikings, Green Bay seems to dig themselves a hole and then try valiantly to, come out of it in the fourth quarter. Obviously, they failed the first time against Detroit. They failed against Chicago, and they failed against Carolina. This was the first successful comeback. How do you get these guys, and what is going on with the offense where, you can just play like that the whole game?
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is, but clearly there's something going on that, whether they're just waking up in the fourth quarter and realizing, oh, we, got to get our shit together here. But it's kind of that makes me think that maybe it's more of a mental thing. Maybe it's not, an injury to Rodgers or some of the other injuries that have hobbled people. Because you see production. You've seen the offense be, get things together. You've seen Rodgers make the throws in crunch time when it gets down to it. But like you said, it's not happening early in the game. It makes me think there's some kind of mental aspect, whether it's preparation from the coaching staff, whether it's the team, thinking they don't have to go out and play with that intensity for an entire four quarters. Hopefully they still don't have that mentality after the way the last several weeks have gone, but it's hard to put a finger on why they're able to kind of turn it around when things get dire, and too often it's been, too little too late. Obviously we finally completed a comeback, but yeah, I don't know if it's just the coaches need to give them a wake-up call. Maybe we're going to talk about Eddie Lacy, or we did talk about Eddie Lacy, and his benching. Maybe it's stuff like that. Maybe they're just trying to wake the offense up and get them to, kind of realize that you got to go pedal the metal like this for the whole game. You're not, this isn't the elite offense this season that we're used to seeing. You can't just, kind of go through the motions and eventually the points are going to come. This offense has to work at it more than they have in the past, and maybe they just haven't realized that yet. I don't know, but they've got to find a way to be more consistent, to be able to do this on a regular basis.
Yeah, I have a little bit more of an X's and O's answer to that, and even possibly a conspiracy theory level take here. I think it's because when it gets to be desperation time in the fourth quarter, it seems to me like Rodgers calls the plays. And I have no love for Tom Clements as a play caller whatsoever. I mean, I think that, when you look at, Jordy Nelson's gone, but when you look at the personnel that the Packers have and what they had last year, and you add in, what should be forward progress from guys like Adams and Rodgers and Janice and Aberderis, things like that, you would think that this offense would take just the slightest step back, even losing Jordy Nelson, because obviously that's a big negative, but you would hope for all those positives, and they have taken a monumental step back. This is, in almost every way statistically, the worst offense that the Packers have had under the Aaron Rodgers era, and that's a very serious problem, especially considering, how highly everybody thinks of this personnel group. So I think when, the going gets tough, it seems like Rodgers is just running up to the line and calling the plays. I don't have any first-hand knowledge of this. This is just a guess, but it seems to me like when it gets to be crunch time in the fourth quarter, it's Rodgers' show. And Clements doesn't have much to do with it. And it's not that he's, telling Clements that he doesn't want his input anymore or anything like that. It's just a simple fact. It's just how football works when you get that late and you have to run up to the line and call the plays. The quarterback's going to do it. And I think that, Rodgers maybe has a better idea of what works in this offense than Tom Clements does.
Yeah, I mean, I can get behind that. It certainly makes sense from a football perspective. Like you said, the quarterback is just going to be calling the plays at that point. It doesn't matter if it's McCarthy or Clements on the sideline calling the plays. You get late in the game and a quarterback's calling the plays at the line, depending on what he sees from the defense. So I think there could be something to that. I certainly am not on the Tom Clements as a play caller bandwagon going into the season. That was, I thought it would be just fine. I thought the level of familiarity would be okay, but it just doesn't seem like there's a level of creativity or anything to Clements' play calling. He seems to kind of get in a groove where he kind of relies on the same stuff, whether it's working or not. And I think it definitely could be Rodgers going up the line, calling plays based on what he sees from the defense, and going from there. I think that's a perfectly viable explanation.
Ryan, I got three questions, and they all relate to John Crockett. First of all, first ballot Hall of Famer, is he going to have to wait a little bit like Chris Carter did? Smile or no smile on the Hall of Fame bust? And for the life of me, I can't remember where this kid went to college. Could you please refresh my memory?
Just some podunk FCS school. I don't know. You probably never heard of it.
Probably not. Then all you got? You have no input on the Hall of Fame status?
Oh, I think he'll probably have to wait a while, and he seems like he's going to be a smiler.
No question about it. John Crockett, or Taz, as he was known at the North Dakota State University, is always a huge energy guy, and that's exactly what he brought to the Packers. That was, part of what I was tweeting and kind of going with on that whole thing was obviously hyperbole and me trying to be funny. But at the same time, Crockett did come into the game when it was 20-0 and really provided a spark on offense. Obviously, Lacy was kind of half benched and half not getting it done. And then at the same time, Starks was having very little success as well. Then this wasn't a game that Green Bay was going to be able to win throwing the ball 65 times. So, Ryan, what did you think of Crockett's contributions to the team, both, kind of on the field and just from an energy perspective?
Yeah, like you said, he was a spark. He didn't get, any full series worth of work. He was splitting with Starks, but he went in there and he made some things happen, and that's very important when you've got a de facto benching for Eddie Lacy. You can't rely 100% on James Starks. Starks has been, I think very solid this season, but you can't just give it to, you can't have him out there in all the plays. And to have Crockett be able to go in there and to be productive and to show you some stuff when Starks is on the sideline and you're not putting Lacy in, it's huge. And there is an energy to that. It's a boost when you can have guys come off the bench and be productive when you have to take the starters, the first string guys out. It's big for an offense. And I think his success also gives a little bit of signal to me that the offensive line is blocking a little bit better in the run game. They struggled a little bit early in the season, but I think they're kind of pulling it together now in the run game. And I think that's evidenced a little bit by, I was looking at Pro Football Focus season-long grades, and Josh Sitton and TJ Lang are both in the top 10 for guards. They've kind of turned around what was a slow start to the season, and obviously some holes that they're opening up, Crockett was able to take advantage and make get through a hole, make a guy miss, and get some yards a couple times. So it's big to have a guy back there like that, as your third running back. I think it was a mistake to have Harris, as the third running back from the start of the season. I thought it should have been Crockett all along. Obviously, the injury that he had in training camp probably caused his practice squad demotion. But I think he's probably going to be the third running back. I think he's going to stick as that third running back spot. I think I like what he brings to the table. He's obviously able to make some things happen when he gets an opportunity. So I'm glad that he's taken that third running back spot.
I agree, and what you see from him too is so much energy. The play that I thought most exemplified John Crockett was when he ran the wrong the wrong run, went to the Rogers' incorrect side, and then cut back into the original correct hole and picked up 12 yards. Then got up kind of like laughing and joking and pointing at Rogers like, oh, my bad, dog, no problem. It was like, dude, you're an undrafted free agent who just screwed up a play in the middle of a must-win game and you're jawjacking with the MVP of the league. But that's not a
guy who's generally happy when guys, you know, go the wrong way or run the wrong route. Rogers is pretty famous for getting after guys for being in the wrong spot.
And Crockett just didn't seem to have care in the world, which...
Right.
That's pretty classic stuff. But even, you know, the remarks from McCarthy and everybody around, all they always talk about is his energy and also just the physiological point of having fresh legs. I mean, this is a guy in week 13 of the season that has like four, five, six carries. So there's plenty of tread on the tires for Crockett as far as being, you know, just flat out healthier than the guys that are trying to tackle him. And so he could be an important part of the puzzle going forward. And I just thought that it was a perfect way to end his night when you saw Rodgers pull his helmet off, kind of like Brett Favre, and sprint down the field. There's John Crockett sprinting right next to him, just smacking him on the ass, telling him how awesome that throw was. And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun to see John get in there and get a little bit excited because, you know, that's kind of what he does. Ryan, let's talk about another future Hall of Famer here. our guy, Jake Ryan. Obviously, you know, we're being a little bit facetious with these Hall of Fame predictions, but these are two young rookies that were really a big part of the success. I said after the game, and actually got quite a bit of Twitter interaction on this, just let's not forget about what the defense did after that Calvin Johnson touchdown to allow this comeback to happen. And a big part of that, I think, was the switch from Nate Palmer to Jake Ryan. I asked Robert Olson of Cheesehead TV. I didn't have time, so I had him look at the tape for me, and he said kind of what I was thinking, that Ryan got in there, was a little bit nervous in the first half, but in the second half really asserted himself. And you could see the defense, as he picked up his level of play, the entire defense picked up theirs. And they, you know, almost pitched a shutout the rest of the way there, only allowing two field goals for basically the rest of the game after that Calvin Johnson touchdown, which I think was either first quarter or barely early second quarter. So that was a big deal. And I thought he played well, and you could just tell there was such a stark difference, not only in playing ability, but just the size and the presence that he brings as opposed to Nate Palmer. I think there's, you know, no reason whatsoever outside of injury to think that the Jake Ryan era has not fully begun in Green Bay.
Yeah, it's a clear difference with him and Nate Palmer, and you know we've been talking about what's taken it so long. We thought that basically should have been like this since the get go. But he's you know, whether there were some mental things, maybe he just didn't have the playbook down just yet. But he's come in, and when he's in there, he seems to just be around the ball. You talk about that a lot with linebackers, the guys who just rack up the tackles. From the middle linebacker spot, just kind of always getting to the ball, and whether you're making the tackle or not, you're right there. You see that evidenced by the fumble recovery on the pepper strip. He's just around. Whether he's making the tackle or not, he's there. He's able to get to the ball. He's good in pursuit. He's willing to stick his nose in against the block and try to make a play in the hole. And it's just the anti-Nate Palmer. Nate Palmer just seems to be lost and getting blown up in the run game. And Ryan seems like he's just has a nose for getting to the ball, getting off a block, getting in pursuit to wherever the play is going. It seems like he's there. And it's a refreshing thing to see from the middle linebacker spot. It seems like that's been something that's been missing for quite a number of years on the Green Bay defense. And it's hopefully he continues to get more comfortable in the defense, and he can, you know, elevate his play even more. He's obviously in his second or third game of of legitimate playing time, and I'm excited to see what he's able to do as he gets a little bit more comfortable. But he's clearly a step up over Nate Palmer, who was just real bad in a lot of spots early in the season.
Yeah, I'm excited. Speaking of rookies, and this is obviously getting to be a theme here, and I actually want to add a little something to this as well. How important do you think the potential returns of Ty Montgomery and Andrew Corliss are for this offense? These were guys that were at least a little bit productive early on in the season, and with so much being made about Packers pass catchers struggling to get open, are these guys that you think can make a big difference? And why don't you go ahead and answer, and I'll kind of give my thoughts specifically on Montgomery.
Oh, I think it'll make a difference. I don't know if it's going to be the difference. I don't think those guys coming back are going to jumpstart the offense back to the, you know, the elite top two or three unit that we saw last season. But I think they will make a difference. Just having more options, you know, with a couple different guys back, you know, Corliss can do things that Rodgers isn't necessarily able to do. Ty Montgomery is able to do things that Jeff Janis and Jared Aberderis aren't able to do. I think that it's going to lend a little bit back to, I talked about Tom Clements, you know, not really being all that creative in his play calling. That could a little bit be, but with, you know, due to the limited personnel he's able to use. With those guys back, maybe he's able to open some things up, try some different formations, do some of the Montgomery out of the backfield stuff that we saw earlier in the season, and maybe open up that playbook a little bit more. So I think that's where the difference is going to be. It'll be nice to have those guys back just as different options, just anything to give this offense a little more diversity and a little more, you know, more of a chance to get back to where closer to where we think they should be. I think, I don't think anybody thinks that this offense and this personnel, like you talked about earlier, I don't think anybody thinks this offense should be this bad at this point, and anything that can get them closer to where we think they should be is going to be a positive. And it certainly won't be a negative to have Corliss and Montgomery back on the field.
I agree. I think, you know, Perillo's done a pretty decent job. Richard Rodgers had his best game of his career against the Lions, but Corliss is kind of an old reliable, and you know, he's obviously not that old, but at the same time, he's a guy that has a little bit of a rapport with Rodgers. You know, obviously he caught the game-winning touchdown against Miami last year. Seems to be enough of an athlete to kind of get some things going, but he's just a guy that you can bring in for 20 to 25 snaps and I think can make a positive impact. But the one that I really think is important is Ty Montgomery, because of how versatile he is and what you can do with both he and Cobb healthy at the same time. I think you saw a little bit of that early in the season. You know, at the time when, you know, Davante Adams wasn't healthy, I still maintain that if you can get all these guys healthy, you can patch together a decent enough receiving core to score points. You know, if you have Janis, Montgomery, Adams, Jones, who has completely fallen off a cliff, James Jones, and Cobb all available. In fact, that might even lead to a reduction in James Jones' playing time. I hate to say it, but I just haven't seen it from him in about 5 weeks. You can use all those guys together and run different stuff and be a little bit more creative, which I think has been, you know, the major... that's been the major complaint about the play calling and the offense, is that, you know, these guys think that the other team kind of knows what they're going to run and can run their defense the same way 60, 70 times a game, and that's a big problem. And so I think Montgomery and Cobb being healthy together is going to force Clements, if he maintains his status as the play caller or not, to be more creative with the play calling, and that can only help this Packers offense move the ball a little bit and honestly get up to their defense's level, because this is the defense we've been waiting for. This Packers defense is the group that is good enough to get the Packers to a Super Bowl. They're waiting for this Packers offense to make it there, and it's certainly possible that next year is going to have to be the year. You know, when Nelson comes back and the 16 offense is at the 14 level, and hopefully, you know, the defense doesn't regress. But this is the 2015 season, and this team's 8-4. So, with that said, I want to ask you, at 8-4, can they turn this thing around? And it's insane to ask at 8-4, can they turn this thing around? But this team does not have aspirations of a division title. This team has Super Bowl aspirations. And the team that we've seen over the 6 weeks is not going to win the Super Bowl. The team that we saw the first 6 weeks certainly could. In fact, I said after the Chargers game that they were the best team in the league. I mean, that's what I thought. And obviously, you know, I was probably a little bit off on that. But at the same time, I mean, they beat Seattle at home, who has completely turned their season around. And you know, they're a good team. Obviously, some of the bad teams that they beat have gotten a little bit better. Chicago got so damn good that they beat us at home. and so, you know, that 6-0 start can't be forgotten. And I'm not saying that 6-0 team was the best in the league anymore, but at least that team has a chance. If they can get back to the level that they were at the beginning of the season, they could win the Super Bowl. And this is another year now where we kind of have to embrace not being Super Bowl favorites and just having a shot. Ryan, do you think they can turn it around and have a shot?
I definitely do. You know, really the only game that they've been not in was that Denver game. They went on the road to Carolina, who looks like the best team in the league now at 12-0. They went on the road in that game and started slow, but then nearly came back and beat them, nearly handed them their first loss. I think if the offense is able to pick it up a little bit, if the return of Montgomery and Corliss is able to improve the offense a little bit, if Eddie Lacy's kind of had his wake-up call and is able to be the Eddie Lacy we know and love, I think the offense can turn it around, and I think they can go in, win a playoff game at Lambeau, and then go into a Carolina or an Arizona and win one of those games. So I definitely think this is a team that has a shot at making a run for a Super Bowl. It does not appear that there will be a top two seed. A lot of stuff would have to go right. But this team definitely has a shot. The defense is playing well enough that the offense doesn't have to get to last year's level to be a Super Bowl contender. The offense just needs to improve a little bit. They need to be a little bit more consistent. They need to play at that fourth quarter, the fourth quarter level we've seen over the last few games. They need to put a whole game together, and I think they can be a good team. They can be a Super Bowl contender. I definitely think they have a shot. I think they at 8-4 are sitting in a pretty good position. Obviously, that game in Week 17 is going to be big for, you know, whether a playoff game is on the road in Wild Card Weekend or at Lambeau. But I definitely think they're a contender. They just need a few more things to go right.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight, I think. You know, if Minnesota does beat Arizona, Green Bay actually controls their own destiny to the number two seed because of that Week 16 game against Arizona. I actually think if, you know, what we think is going to happen happens and Arizona wins, that'll knock the Vikings down and that'll be, you know, them losing 3 out of 4. I would be surprised then if they sweep those next two games. I know they play the Giants. Ryan, do you remember who the second team they play in between Green Bay and Arizona is?
I believe it's Atlanta, but let me look.
Nope, they just played Atlanta. I think it's a division game.
I've got it. It's...
This is great radio, by the way.
Oh, yeah. they are... at Arizona, home against Chicago, home against New England, against New York, and then the Week 17 game at Lambeau.
See, I think if they lose tonight, they split that. That's my opinion. If
Bears and Giants?
Yeah, I think they split Bears and Giants, and that Week 17 game at Lambeau Field may not necessarily mean anything. We'll see, but at the same time, if they get it done tonight, then Green Bay controls their own destiny to the 2 seed. I think the goal here has to be to find a way to go 3-1 over the next 4 and get to 11-5. At 11-5, they're going to win the division. And that would be the three seed. Obviously, if they can run the table, that'd be great. And Green Bay's been pretty fantastic at closing the season lately. We'll see what happens. I think you're going to learn a lot on Sunday. I think if they come out flat and barely beat Matt Castle and the Cowboys, or, God forbid, lose their third home game of the season. Honestly, just thinking about that, man, it would have been nice to get one of those Lions or Bears wins at home. Those were ones that, you know, you and I thought were in the bank at the beginning of the season, and it would be so nice to be 9-3 right now. But obviously, you know, you can't change what happened, and that's unfortunate. But this Dallas game, I think, is going to tell you quite a bit. Ryan, let's get into it a little bit. Let's preview this Dallas game. And obviously, you know, last year's game against Dallas was pretty famous. The Dez Bryant catch, non-catch, whatever it was. People seem to forget that that was going to leave a very iffy Cowboys defense on the field against Aaron Rodgers with like 3.5 minutes to go, with the Packers just needing a field goal. But whatever, right. I mean, that game does get blamed on the Bryant catch, non-catch. Dez is about all they've got left from that crew, it seems like. Obviously, he and Witten's still healthy, but DeMarco Murray's an Eagle. Tony Romo's got a broken collarbone, and so we are in for the Matt Castle experience. What do you think Green Bay has going for them in this game, and then what challenges does Dallas present that maybe they didn't present in last year's playoff game?
Well, I think the positives for the Packers is this is not a particularly good defense. They're fine. Sean Lee, linebacker's playing very well. They've got a couple of guys who can rush the passer, but overall, this isn't a defense that really puts the fear of God in you, which is kind of what the Packers offense needs. They need. I don't know if at this point in the season you'd have any confidence in them going up against an elite defense, you know, like they did in Denver, or they were obviously able to do some things against Carolina, but with a not elite defense across from the Packers offense, I think this is a good opportunity to see if some things work, to try to work out some kinks, try to see if they can find that fourth quarter magic, and go out there and put some points up finally. What concerns me a little bit is the Cowboys obviously have a very good offensive line, and if the Packers front seven isn't able to put pressure on or isn't able to close up some running lanes, then the Cowboys offense might be able to do some things. Dez Bryant is a little bit matchup proof. He's going to kind of get his if Castle has time to throw it to him. Bryant's probably going to make some plays for him, but I think a big key is going to be the front seven of the Packers shutting down the run game against a really good offensive line and putting pressure on Castle. If you're able to rattle Castle a little bit, he's just going to fold up like a lawn chair. But if he's got a clean pocket, he's going to be able to get the ball at least in the general direction of Dez Bryant and Jason Witten, of their pass catchers. So I think a big key is going to be the stopping the run. McFadden's been a pretty productive behind that offensive line, and getting pressure on Castle, because that's huge. If Castle's pressured, he's not going to be effective. But if he's sitting back there in a clean pocket, there's a chance that he's able to do some damage. So I think the front seven of the Packers against the Cowboys offensive line is going to be the big question mark. That's the best unit that the Cowboys have, is their offensive line. And really, for this season, it's been the best unit that the Packers have, is the front seven. In the pass rush and against the run, I think. Hopefully, Mike Daniels is able to put a little pressure on against the guards of the Cowboys, and we're able to find some creative ways to get to Matt Castle. But I think that's the big key.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, I think, you know, part of it has to do with the Romo thing and not being a part of that team right now. They have not won a game without him yet this season. So,
yeah, they won on Monday night.
Oh, right. No, okay, so they're 1-6. They're 1-6 without Romo. Their first win was this last Monday night, and you're exactly right. The defense doesn't put the fear of God into anybody. They're 18th in DVOA, so almost dead average. And so, you know, this is a game, like I said, that I think is kind of going to define the rest of the season. If they lose this game, I'm kind of done with them. I mean, obviously, I'm going to still watch the games, cheer for the team, et cetera, but my optimism as to whether this team can get it done, if they can't get it going at home against Matt Cassel in a conference game, you know, against an average defense, I just can't. I can't help you. That's kind of where I'm at. I just can't help you. And so this is a game I think where the offense has a chance to get going. I think they're getting a little bit healthier. Hopefully, Rodgers himself is getting a little bit healthier. He, you know, looked a little bit better as the game went on in Detroit. You know, monster hit by Ezekiel Ansah notwithstanding. I think, you know, this is a game that they have a chance to get right. They're better than Dallas, and they need to get it going at home. I mean, the idea of the Green Bay Packers losing three straight games at Lambeau Field in the Aaron Rodgers era is a little bit too much for me to handle. And I want to talk just briefly about how important this game is. We touched on it a little bit, Ryan, but getting to 9-4 is so important as the rest of this, you know, as the rest of this season is kind of concerned. How important do you think this game is, Ryan?
It's very important. You know, you talked about going 3-1 over the over the last four games, getting to 11-5, getting a division title. If the Packers go out and lose to the Cowboys, then you're fighting back to even to just to get that division title. It makes Week 17 a must win, and then you kind of need some help. I'm hoping the Vikings maybe drop a game somewhere else along the line, but this is big. You've got to, if we're going to be a playoff team, if we're going to have a shot at the Super Bowl, if we're going to be a contender, you have to beat the Cowboys, you have to beat the Raiders, and then you've got two good teams at the end of the season. But this game and next week's game are going to be very big for the playoff picture, obviously. If you're able to beat the Cowboys, if you're able to right the ship a little bit, get the offense rolling, then you go into the last three games with a little bit of confidence. You control your own destiny a little bit. But if you lose this game, you can't have a lot of confidence going into the last three games when knowing that you probably have to win all three. So this is very big. This is an opportunity against a team that hasn't been very good without their quarterback. It's an opportunity to come out, make a statement, and finally kind of get this ship righted, get back on track, get the offense looking good. Finally get the offense looking good while the defense plays well. It'll be fun to see if the offense is able to pull it together with the way this defense is playing. There's potential here, but you gotta show it against a bad team like the Cowboys appear to be right now without Romo.
Ryan, I've got Packers 27, Cowboys 17. I think this is not going to be one of those comeback games. I don't think they blow them out as we had become accustomed to at Lambeau Field, but I think they lead wire to wire and instill just a little bit of confidence in the fan base. What do you got?
My prediction is 24-16. Still have a win. I think this defense is going to be is going to be able to hold down the offense. That offensive line is solid, but I think when it comes down to it, I don't think Matt Cassel is going to be enough to be able to do enough to move the ball and to score a lot of points. And I do think the Packers will be able to do something. I think you know, the 24 points, you know, maybe some of that comes from a bad Matt Cassel turnover that gives the Packers offense the ball at the 15-20 yard line. Something like that happens where maybe the offense doesn't completely get rolling, but they get some help from the defense, and they're able to put up some points at home, and have a touchdown victory over the Cowboys.
At 24-16, does that game end in a recovered onside kick?
Hopefully not.
Guys, we want to thank you as always for listening to the show. Obviously, we really appreciate a subscription to the Packers Talk Network on iTunes. Give us a review. We prefer reviews with 5 stars that say lots of nice things about us. It just helps when people go on iTunes or other podcast applications and search Packers or search NFL. You know, it helps us come up higher, and it helps us bring high-quality content to you, the people, the Packers fans. Give me a follow. I'm at Ross Uglum on Twitter. Ryan, where are you at?
I am at Hillsland358.
You can also follow the show at From the Benches and the network itself at Packers Talk Net. Thanks, everyone, and go Pack Go.
From the Benches. From the Benches.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Card.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.